It's defensive linemen this week. We're ranking the top 10 in the NFL, why Jadeveon Clowney broke out in 2016, why Michael Bennett might not be the kind of player you think he is, and does J.J. Watt still top this list despite the injuries? All that and much more on the MMQB 10 Things podcast.
The MMQB presents the MMQB 10 Things podcast, powered by digital media. Find your voice. And now, your hosts, Andy Benoit and Gary Gramling.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB 10 Things podcast. I am Gary Gramling, here as always with Andy Benoit, and we are moving along with the position ranking shows this week. It is defensive linemen, minus the edge guys. We already did the edge guys, so these are the non-edge defensive linemen.
So that would include 4-3 defensive tackle, obviously, and of course 3-4 defensive tackle. And then the real key, because this is probably the most loaded position in the NFL in terms of talent, depth of talent, quality of talent even, those 3-4 defensive ends, your J.J. Watt types, your Muhammad Wilkerson types.
Yeah, and you know, there are a couple guys, we did this last year, but if you do not remember last year's show, or God forbid you didn't listen to last year's show, Michael Bennett is the guy that everyone always, we count him in the defensive line because he does so much of his impact, and really, well, I don't know, Andy, bulk of his snaps come at three technique?
I emailed our friends at Pro Football Focus for that statistic. That's not a grading stat, so this is where I love Pro Football Focus. They're the best at it, tracking where guys line up, and they capture the nuances of it. And Bennett played three technique. I think it was over 60% of the time last year. Seattle played more nickel last season than they've ever played, and Bennett plays three technique in nickel. That's what he makes his money at. He's a great three technique.
Yeah, so he is in this group, and he did. He was eligible for it, and he made the list. That's a little spoiler right there.
Yeah, be careful now.
Yeah, I won't reveal too much. By the way, if you're speaking of Pro Football Focus, we had a really good piece on the MMQB. Albert Breer, who also has a podcast with us, but he did a whole piece on analytics and how teams are using them across the league on the MMQB last week that you should check out if you're kind of into the impact of PFF and some of the other sort of new approaches going on around the league. I thought it was really interesting.
It was. He did a good job with that. I bet it took a lot of time, too. He was, speak to 40 guys for that? 40 interviews? Man, did he transcribe 40 interviews then?
I can tell you this. It took a lot of time to edit it.
So you're saying it was poorly written?
No, it was lengthily. It was long.
Yeah.
It was very, very long. But it was really interesting. I don't know. It was a great piece. But enough about Albert Breer and sort of about analytics for the time being. We have a list to go through. We have a top 10 countdown here. Our researcher this week was Matt Booker. You may remember him from back, I believe it was the running back show. I think he was the opener. He was a leadoff hitter here in the rotation of researchers. But Matt was the third voter this week. If you haven't figured out how we do this yet, AP poll style, if you get a first place vote, 15 points. Second place vote, 14 points. All the way down to 15th place vote gets 1 point. Andy, Matt, and I gave our top 15s. Andy's votes count as double because he knows twice as much about football as anyone out there. So, with that in mind, we reveal the top 10 of our voting.
Number 10.
And we begin with number 10. That is Gerald McCoy, Tampa Bay Bucks. Bucks were a lot better last year defensively. I feel like they're turning a corner. It's sort of one of those things where it was kind of like, well, McCoy, great player on kind of a meh defense. But they were really good last year.
There were two Buccaneers defenses, the one we saw in the first half of the season and the one we saw in the second half. Really, there were three defenses last season that were tremendous in the second half after being so-so in the first half. And all three of them had young players. The Bucs were one of them. The other one was the Falcons and then the Pittsburgh Steelers. And Tampa Bay, they were so good in their zone awareness as a group. So really, their back seven is what played so well for them. Mm-hmm. But in a zone-based scheme, your back seven can largely be only as good as your front four is, because no zone is designed to hold up. The coverage will not last more than 2.5, not even up to 3 seconds. I mean, zones are designed for quick games. You want to force the ball out on your schedule defensively, and that's why a guy like McCoy, who's at his best, he's probably the best pure gap-penetrating defensive lineman in the league just in terms of getting right upfield. That's where he becomes so valuable for them.
Yeah, and, you know, did Mike Smith do anything a little bit different with him than the way they used to use him under Lovey and that system?
With Gerald McCoy, you mean?
With McCoy, yeah.
Not really. A lot of these guys, Gary, that we're going to talk about are going to be position flexible. McCoy really isn't that guy. He is pretty much a pure three technique. They don't move him. He might play nose shade once in a while. I doubt it showed up in my film notes. Mm-hmm. His impact's as a three technique. He lines up, and what we mean by that, of course, is he lines up between the guard and the tackle. And sometimes he does it on the weak side, where away from the tight end, so he gets one-on-one blocking. Sometimes that's called an under front, if you care. And then sometimes he goes in an over front, where he's on the strong side. And if you do that, you've got to be a real man, because that's where you get the double teams and you're fighting. It's a whole different type of three technique often. So he can do both, but as an under front three technique, a guy that just gets up the field, that's what makes Gerald McCoy a unique player. And he's a really good one.
All right, let's move on to number nine.
Number nine.
A little bit of a different style of player here, and an Andy Benoit favorite. I'll just say, flat out, this guy is one of your favorite players, Andy. Brandon Williams, Baltimore Ravens. He is number nine on our list. He's a good old-fashioned run stuffer here.
Yes, he is, and he has made his bread as a one technique. He got a lot of money this offseason, so I guess he really did make some bread as a one technique or a nose shade. So he lines up slightly over the center, kind of shaded towards the guard there, and you have different gap responsibilities depending on the structure of the play. But suffice it to say, when you're lining up in that spot, you're often getting double teamed. It's just natural, and so you're fighting double. That's what you do. But Williams, what really stands out to me, Gary, and I'm sure I'm the guy that got him on this list, because when I got done ranking my defensive linemen, I didn't put numbers by him. I just put him in an order, and I realized, man, I got Brandon Williams like top five, top seven, something like that.
Yeah.
Where he made himself different is as a three tech. So we talked position flexible. He's the first guy. He's built like a one technique, but he has that kind of body. He's rotund. But he has the initial quickness and the second effort moves of a three technique. And when Baltimore was great last year, it was on nickel downs or nickel packages on first and second down. So they face teams in three wide receivers on first or second down. They play nickel. They keep their run defending defensive line in, and their nickel's just an extra cornerback. So they're not putting in their pass rushers. So when they do that, it's Michael Pierce becomes the nose tackle, and Brandon Williams, that's when he slides over to three tech. And when those two were on the field together, teams averaged, I think it was 2.8 yards a carry against Baltimore. Yeah. And those were first and second down carry. I mean, those were meaningful carries. He's a great player. He is a great player, and I was glad to see him get paid this offseason.
Yeah, I was going to say, not to be overly critical, but the Ravens slowed down a little bit as far as their run defense goes in the latter third of the season, let's call it.
Yep.
Did you see any fall off with Williams? Was it a matter of, I don't know, were they getting out schemed? Was it just a matter of playing better teams?
They just all played a little worse. They probably wore down, and maybe that happens. A young guy, Michael Pierce, undrafted rookie, he hasn't played an NFL schedule before. Yeah, Timmy Jernigan has, I guess, but he's never been a full-time starter. I don't think Brandon, I'd have to check to see if he's a flash player. That's what's unique, is that he doesn't just kind of steadily own the game the way a Linval Joseph or like an Alan Branch does for New England. He jumps off the screen and makes impact plays. I'd have to look at my notes to see if he made fewer impact plays, but what you're saying is exactly right. There's no doubt about it. Baltimore's run defense was awesome the first 10 games of the season. And then they fell off. They tailed off. They know it, too. I mean, they'll tell you that I've met with their defensive coaches. We've talked about why. So it happens. But and that's on Brandon Williams. You're right. He needs to be accountable for that. He's their best player up front, in my opinion.
All right.
Number eight.
This is Jarrell Casey, Tennessee Titans. Sort of a, you know, he's an overlooked guy. He's not a big box score stats type of guy. as our Matt Booker points out. 33 career sacks, 10.5 of those came in 2013. But he's you know, he's also a guy who kind of
more. It's a great stat from Matt Booker.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I would say, you know, he's also the kind of guy who, I mean, look, Gerald McCoy kind of, yeah, he looks like a ball player. He looks like a dominant defensive lineman. Casey looks a little, I mean, he's in better shape than me, but, you know, the eye test.
He looks
like a
Disney character rendering of a defensive lineman. Like, he's
kind of
pudgy.
Like, guy's a little,
round.
Looks like someone out of the 80s or something like that. Like,
yeah.
What
he is a superb athlete caught in a round man's body. I mean, we've talked about it every year with Jarrell Casey. He has the biggest mismatch between his physical output and his body type. He overachieves in his body more than anyone in the league. And is it going to be annoying if I say, position flexible for every single guy? I mean, I don't want to do that, but we're talking the elite guys here, and that's the nature of today's NFL.
Well,
Casey
is maybe...
All right, well, Casey's very position flexible. He's the most position flexible of the group. And Tennessee, what they do, we're taught when they get to, I mean, first and second down, like all these guys, he can dominate, make those flash plays that we've talked about. But what Tennessee does on third down, they move everyone around. They are truly an amoeba front. They don't just line up their down linemen. You almost never see more than two guys, maybe even one guy, with a hand in the dirt on third downs. They're roaming around, and they're doing that because they set up so many stunts and twists out of their blitzes. So one guy attacks one gap, someone loops in behind them and takes the path to the quarterback that's been cleared because of the guy who attacked the gap. The guy that's the key to all of it, their biggest feature in it, is Jarrell Casey. It's not Brian Arakpo or Derek Morgan. It's Casey. And he's their most nimble, flexible pass rusher. You'd never guess it based on how he's built. Look at a Brian Arakpo. He looks like the prototype for an edge guy. I mean, he's got the most beautiful body of any defender in the league. But Jarrell Casey's the guy there in Tennessee.
Yeah, and I mean, he's played in a couple different schemes, too. I mean, they've had plenty of changeover on the coaching staff and the time he's been at Tennessee. So he's kind of had experience in a couple different defenses here.
That's a great point, and he's been productive in all of them. And to be able to transition to being a stand-up pass rusher as a productive, oversized defensive tackle is rare. It's very rare. I bet you the Tennessee Titans, remember, we've talked about this before, Gary, and our listeners will remember, I hope some of them will, when we went to Buffalo and they told us about Kyle Williams and how they said he's their best athlete on the team. He just happens to have a big fat guy's body. That I bet Tennessee would feel the same. I bet you they'd tell you the same thing about Jarrell Casey. He's one of our three or four best athletes.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we forge on and go ahead to number seven, if you've been listening to these shows, you're probably used to my unhinged manifestos about iTunes reviews coming after number four before we reveal the top three. And I will have another unhinged manifesto later in this show before we reveal the top three. But we are doing something a little bit different this offseason, and I want to let you know about it twice in this show. We're going to do a giant mailbag show. It's going to be as long as we have to make it to get to as many questions as possible. That's going to be coming up first show after the position ranking series is done. We have three more of those shows after that. I feel like I'm making listeners do a lot of math here, but it's going to be like late July.
It's on the way. It's on the
way.
Yeah. At some point. Keep listening. You'll hear it anyway. Just keep listening. That's all we're begging of you.
Exactly. But if you have a question that you want answered on the mailbag show, I can't guarantee we will get to literally everyone, but if you leave your questions along with a 5-star review on iTunes, we will absolutely 100% guaranteed answer your question. If it's a really, really dumb question, and I feel like we've never gotten a really, really dumb question. If it's a super dumb question, like you're kind of
messing
around.
Yeah, if you're doing it on purpose, we're going to know.
Being a little cheeky, as they might say. We will still read the question. We will address it. We probably won't give you a very good answer, but if you want a question answered, 5-star review on iTunes, we will answer it on the giant summer blast mailbag show. We're still working on some sort of branding for it.
I feel like if we're going to do this the integrity route, why don't we do all the starters? Like, if someone wants to give us two stars, why don't we read their question as well? And we can mention the stars with the question. We can. Does that, like, shame someone if they – I don't know how the etiquette of this goes.
I feel like
we're really undercutting something here for saying, well, give us five stars, we'll put you on this show. We're going to read every question you put on there.
We're
going to trust the star system. Let's trust the star system.
Oh, we're going to be pretty unhappy if we see less than five stars, though.
It's still up there. It's up there no matter – I mean –
Yeah, I guess.
What we want, though, here's in all seriousness, the reason, because my initial thinking on this kind of thing is that's a terrible idea. Let's control the content. I'm just being honest. But I was open to this because I see all these questions we get from our listeners, and we have great listeners. We really do. And they ask smart questions. Now, some of you write incredibly too long, and that's going to be an issue if we're reading these questions on the show. But for the most part, there's some good football discussion. We get good feedback on those mailbag shows. So we want to do this, and we want to engage with everyone because we do enjoy it. We absolutely enjoy it.
Well, so yeah, we should also mention we might be editing some of the questions for to make them a little more concise.
The Europeans are the ones that do it. They send all these deep analysis questions. They're great. You learn a lot, but you think, man, I can't. That's 4 minutes of the show right there if we read that whole thing.
Well, maybe we'll do one show that's just questions, and then we'll do the next show is the answers to the questions
with
from
them?
The previous show.
See, we'll figure it out, but we're excited for it. The mailbag
Absolutely.
Summer special.
It'll be good. You'll be hearing a lot about it over the next couple shows. But that was your first warning. And now let's move on to number seven.
Number seven.
This is Ndamukong Suh. When we talked about him a year ago, he was coming off sort of a relatively down year in 2015, and we kind of wondered, at least I wondered, you know, when your team's having a down season, Suh is a high-effort grappler type of guy. So much of it is really motor with what he does. And when your team's having a down season and struggling, maybe that motor is just not what it would normally be. But good stat here from Matt Booker. Suh last year, 973 snaps, 1,056 if you count special teams. And that was the most among all defensive linemen last season. That's a lot of football.
Yep. And I've never noticed anything negative about his effort watching him in Miami and back in Detroit. He's a different type of guy than the rest on this. For one, he's position flexible too. He's actually pretty good when he lines up at defensive end, and he does that a lot more than people realize. He's certainly a defensive tackle, a 4-3 D tackle, but he can play on the outside. And when he's good outside, he is excellent on stunts and twists, designer pass rush concepts. Mm-hmm. He's mostly excellent as what they call the penetrator, the guy that goes in first and attacks the blockers, and then the other guy is the looper. He comes around that attacker, and that's who you're creating the path to the quarterback for. And Suh creates a lot of clean paths for guys, but he makes a lot of noise as a penetrator. And something that's happened I'd love to ask an offensive line and defensive line coach why this is, but in the last, I want to say last 2 years, the penetrators have become more of the sackers in these stunts and twists. It used to be the looper was, because that's who you create the pass rushing lane for. But now it's the guy that's setting up the pass rushing lane that's getting it, and Sue's been very productive in that sense too. So on your designer pass rush concepts, he's a tremendous player. And then what I really love most about him, Gary, Suh has it. The other guy who has it is Mike Daniels in Green Bay. They have what I call gradual strength. They get stronger as the play unfolds. They wear you down over the course of the play, which, by the way, that would be the definition of a high-effort, high-motor guy. So
yeah.
Suh is the best in the league. He's not a dynamic athlete. He's not a quick, sudden guy. He's okay. He's a little better than average. He's a tick above average. But where he's good is applying his strength and his technique over the course of the play. And he's going to beat you later in the down and later in the game.
Yeah. Look, he's been a great free agent addition since they got him there in Miami. And there were all sorts of questions early on when the Dolphins were struggling with him. But they're certainly glad to have him right now.
Number six.
This is Calais Campbell, another new Jacksonville Jaguar. He was a rock in Arizona for a long time. Only missed six games in 9 years. I mean, look, he does a lot of things well, and you can play him in a couple spots on the line as well.
I love Calais Campbell. He got a third contract. Good for him. He is as good now as he was when he got his second contract.
Yeah.
I spent time with Arizona, their coaching staff, and learning their defensive scheme firsthand this offseason. And it was a little bit uncomfortable. I had to say, after we watched several hours, I learned why they line guys up where they do and what they teach them. I had to say, you know, you guys are going to – you've lost a lot of guys. That number 93 at defensive line is going to be the one who's really hard to replace.
Yeah.
And I get the sense they know that, and they truly feel good about Robert Nkemdiche and Rodney Gunter there. Mm-hmm. But some guys do some things that are just irreplaceable, and I think Campbell might be one of those guys. He's great wherever he lines up, another position-flexible guy. He can get north and south very well, which is unusual for a guy who's, what is he, 6'8", and he's got long arms. He has a lot of body to move with him, and a lot of body that can get tangled up with blockers in the trenches. And he still penetrates well, and he still plays really low to the ground. And then when he goes east and west, his raw strength takes over, and his technique takes over. His awareness is great. Calais Campbell, if you had five guys that do their job as well as he does on your defense, you're going to the playoffs and competing for at least a championship or Super Bowl every year.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that always stood out to me with Campbell is he's 6'8", but he plays with tremendous leverage, and that's, I mean, you would think that would be the number one problem for a guy who is built like he's built like a center on a basketball team.
Yeah, absolutely. Or you'd have to play him in a specific way. A good example, remember Chris Canty a few years ago?
Yeah.
He was a Raven and a Cowboy mainly. I think he was also a Giant for a while.
Giant for a little bit, yep.
Yep. He was 6'9", 6'8", 6'7", whatever. He's one of those power forward type guys. And he was tremendous as a strong side defensive end. But that was about all you could do with him. And he was great. He earned a lot of money. He deserved it. He had a nice career. Well, Calais Campbell's Chris Canty, who can line up anywhere because he can do everything. It's similar stylistically, and I don't want anyone to get carried away with this, but stylistically, it's kind of like what LeBron James does in basketball. I mean, he's got an abnormal body, and he applies the athleticism from that body anywhere on the court. Campbell is similar to that. He's not the best player in the world like James is, but he has an unbelievable body, and he can do so many things with it. It's just unreal.
So this is a little bit of trivia for you, Andy, or our listeners as well, and I will reveal it later in the show, but we had Calais Campbell this week. We had A.J. Bouye on the cornerback show last week. Those are two guys who made our top 10 lists who have changed teams this offseason. Obviously, those guys are both Jaguars as well. I'll put them together here. We have two other guys we've done so far, and we've done every position so far except for wide receiver, quarterback, and linebacker, off the line of scrimmage linebacker, whatever you want to call it. Sort of traditionally what you think of a linebacker. But there are two other guys we've covered on top 10 lists who changed teams this offseason in addition to Campbell and Bouye.
And you want me to know who, I don't know,
we'll say during my unhinged rant after number 4, I'll give a little beat and we'll see if we can answer it, Andy. How's that?
Well, okay, so am I supposed to – I mean, why are you telling me now? Like, am I supposed to answer this, or am I waiting until number 4?
You're supposed to think about it, not now, because we're about to reveal number 5. But you're supposed to think about it between 4 and 3 when I'm telling our wonderful audience about how they can be a part of our tremendous mailbag show coming up.
I'm sure they're
mailbag
looking forward
show
to hearing that again. Yeah, cool, okay.
Beach
all right,
party,
very good. I will
fun
put in the back of my mind. I have no clue right now, though.
All right. Well, let's go on to number 5.
Number 5.
That is Jadeveon Clowney. Look, we kind of wondered, was he ever going to break out? And yes, last year, the answer was yes, he did. My question to you, was there something different about him, or was this just a matter of more consistency and really, essentially being healthier?
Yeah, staying healthy, getting some experience. And I think Houston understands what he is now. And my guess is they had a pretty good idea when they drafted him, but I think their idea has been confirmed and they have fully embraced it. And that is the reality that Jadeveon Clowney is an interior defensive lineman, not an edge guy at all. That's why he's on this list. And these guys we've talked about, the guys that are your Von Millers, your Khalil Macks, your defensive ends, your true edge guys, they have bendability. They can twist and contort, and they're explosive and elastic together. Jadeveon Clowney is just plain explosive, and he's strong. He is not bendable, though. He does not bend well.
Yeah.
He is stiff. He is a stiff guy, but he is so dynamically explosive. Just because you're stiff doesn't mean you can't play. Just means you can't play off the edge every single snap. And they've now moved him. He's at his best as a defensive tackle. We've been over that. And they're going to play him there a lot, I bet, this season, especially with J.J. Watt back now. I could see him playing Watt and Clowney on the same side of the line at times. Watt would be the guy that probably lines up outside. Clowney needs to be playing between guys. He needs to have the guys in front of him that he's attacking. He has to go through people, not around people. And he's been great at that.
Yeah, and last year, 75% of his snaps playing in a defensive tackle slash five technique type of role, where he is, like you said, playing between people as opposed to trying to play on the edge. I mean, look, the thing I always think of as his greatest flaw is, and I could never tell if it's just because the stiffness or he's just completely losing track of the pocket. It just seems like anytime he's asked to rush off the edge, he too often ends up getting pushed, I don't know, 12 yards upfield past the pocket, and it's almost like he doesn't realize what he's moving toward.
Well, just think about, how do you feel when you're stiff? And if somebody, a blocker, were to push you, your momentum as a stiff guy would carry you several yards. You're not going to contort and counter the push that you just received. So that's just, you're right with that. It's the way he is. He's a stiff, explosive athlete, and not many guys can thrive that way, because stiff's a bad thing to be in professional sports. But he is so explosive that the stiffness gets offset, more than offset. I mean, he's a top five, top six defensive lineman in the NFL now.
There you go. He's it's going to be a really exciting year for the Texans, at least on the defensive side of the ball. We'll see what they do at quarterback.
Oh, big time. I'm, you know, I'm going there, too. I'm going to their camp to write about their defense this year.
When I talked to Duerson about that, we were talking about Sports Illustrated preview issue stories, and I was just kind of like, Andy's got to do five across in Houston. And Duerson's like, yeah, I already wrote that down, obviously. So
five across, meaning that five-man front that Houston plays and everything that comes from it and all that one-on-one blocking they get. I bragged to Duerson. I said, you know, well, we could go back and use a lot of what I wrote before the Patriot playoff game, because they did everything we said they'd do in that. Can we use that article again? And then I felt like a complete, you know, D-bag for bragging like that. But I did it again right here. I did again. And it's that, I'll tell you what, that five across front with Whitney Mercilus right over the center, and now Jadeveon Clowney and J.J. Watt lining up, all those guys are getting one-on-one blocking in that five across front. And that's what they did in New England when really Houston's defense outplayed that Patriot offense in the playoff game. And that's going to be a big factor in the NFL this year, and from what I think is the best defense in the league with Houston.
Yeah, and for the record, I'm not surprised an assistant managing editor at Sports Illustrated would say, let's not recycle that article you ran online 8 months ago in the NFL preview issue.
All right, a little political there. Undertones,
there you go.
Political undertones.
No, just, hey, that's just media life at this point.
Number four.
Let's jump ahead to number four. This is Fletcher Cox. Andy, I remember when we talked about Fletcher Cox a year ago, and you said, what was the note? You had some coaches say he's the number one guy who keeps them up at night when they're scheming in.
Did
the,
I say
that?
I could
Eagles.
Believe. I don't remember. I could believe that. I don't quite remember that, but I could certainly believe it. Yeah, I remember that now. You're right, because I talked with NFC East coaches a lot last offseason, just coincidentally. And so those guys that have to play him regularly, that's the guy. They all go out of their way to say that's the guy that bothers us. He is really good. I don't know if we need to go super in-depth with him, Gary. He's an interior defensive lineman as well. Vinny Curry is the guy that has what we're calling the position flexibility for them, not Cox quite so much. He can play nose shade or three technique. And the reason he can do both is because He has great second effort strength. So Ndamukong Suh will wear you down over the course of the play and gradually beat you. Cox will beat you badly with his second move. He'll get off with his first at times too. But it's that second move that he has that really separates him, and that allows him to contest with blockers. So he's good inside at three tech or one tech. He's not someone I would put on the edge though, but that doesn't detract from what he does. They don't need him on the edge there.
Now, is his usage a little bit different? I mean, they underwent a pretty big scheme change last year in Philadelphia, going to the Jim Schwartz and the whole wide nine thing up front.
Yeah, they did. I think that stuff gets a little bit overblown. I was surprised to hear Connor Barwin talk about it, because he's now with the Rams and he's back in the 3-4 under Wade Phillips.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in that 4-3 under Jim Schwartz last year. And I was surprised to have him say, yeah, I feel back at home with the Rams here. It's my natural position. Last year was a big adjustment for me, because I tend to agree more with what Aaron Donald said. Aaron Donald's coming up on our list. I don't think that surprises anyone. Aaron Donald, when they asked him about playing for Wade Phillips, he said, that's not that big a deal. 4-3, 3-4 doesn't matter. It's all pretty much the same gap principles anyway. And I think that's correct. I think that's the truth. And so Fletcher Cox, they were in totally different schemes, and I'm sure he could tell you 10 things he did differently because of that. But just sticking back at the big overhead picture, you're still often attacking one gap in the NFL. People don't line up in two gap across the whole defensive line anymore. It's not how teams play. Mm-hmm. They might have one guy two gapping, but they do that out of a 3-4 or a 4-3. Unless you're seeing someone line up directly over the center as a nose tackle, then that's when you get into the 3-4 stuff a little bit. And even that's not super common, because a lot of teams that do that now, they slide their defensive ends inside and really condense the front, make what they call those bear fronts. And so it's just not a two-gap league anymore, I guess is what I'm getting at. So I don't think it matters what scheme Fletcher Cox is in. He's a one-gap penetrating type like pretty much every other guy on this list.
Yeah. I mean, I would say with a guy with Barwin, though, when you're talking basically hand in the dirt 4-3 N versus stand up 3-4 outside linebacker, I would think that's something of a difference.
Depends if you're on the stronger weak side, and Barwin's a strong mm-hmm. side guy, so maybe that is what he's getting at. But like DeMarcus Ware, for example, he was always the open, as they call it, the open end defensive end, or the weak side defensive mm-hmm. end under Wade Phillips. And he plays, if you just think about where the defensive end lines up on the weak side, if there's no tight end over there, it's just you're outside the tackle. Well, in a 3-4, you might have someone inside of you, and so you're standing up, your hand's not in the dirt, you're an outside linebacker, but you're standing literally in the same spot that you would in a 4-3, when your hand, maybe it is down in the dirt because you don't have someone inside of you, or that's just the way you're coached or whatever. But it's not important how guys line up, like the stance. What's important is where they line up. The stance is just how they go about playing, and it's where you line up. And a lot of guys, Barwin, it's a little bit different if you're on the strong side, I suppose. I mean, we get into a lot of detail there. But these dynamic guys, most of them are the weak side players. Your weak side defensive tackles, like we talked about, those under fronts where you're penetrating the gaps, or those weak side defensive ends.
All right. Fair enough. I will side with you against Connor
Barwin.
Well,
you know, I would side with Connor Barwin, though. Again, if we could have him come on the show, and he could probably tell us 10 things that are different. So I'm not wanting to completely minimize it, but the point is great players are great players, and schemes yeah. are – it's more concepts now in the league. Teams don't run their scheme as much as they execute concepts, and concepts tend to be the same from scheme to scheme, just different presentation.
All right. Well, before we dive into top three, this is that time of the show where I just say a lot of stuff to our audience about, upcoming things and exciting developments at our show. So let's start with wide receivers. That's the next show coming up next week, if you're excited about that. Also, our trivia break. Andy, think about this.
I forgot we were doing it.
Campbell and Bouye. Two other guys who have been in our top 10 shows so far, so that excludes quarterbacks, linebackers, and wide receivers, but two other guys who have changed teams this offseason. And that answer coming in a moment. Before we get to it, I just want to make a quick note. I want to pull back the curtain a little bit on our show. Our producer, Lou Pellegrino, he was recently wed. He is on his honeymoon right now, and we congratulate him. We're very happy for Lou. He will be back soon. But that means Matt Havia is pinch hitting this week as our producer. Matt did most of the shows last year during the regular season. When you do our show during the regular season, it means you have to be in the studio at, you know, whatever, when we start taping at 12:45, and you're there until 2 a.m., and then you're doing post-production stuff until some insane hour after Andy and I have retreated to our beds and our, you know, the comfort of our homes and whatnot. So we had a little schedule screw-up this week, and poor Matt Havia is it's very late right now. It is very late. We tape these during the day, during the off season, but right now it is well past midnight on the East Coast. Matt's in the studio in Manhattan. He does not live in Manhattan. He's out in Long Island. I don't even know how you get back to Long Island this time of night. I think I don't know. I think the only way is like kayaking across the Long Island Sound. I think he's going to have to figure that out in an hour or so when he heads home. But Matt Havia is a stand-up guy, and whether he likes it or not, he's also our unofficial audience development guy. So this whole giant mailbag thing sort of came out of us misconstruing his advice, most likely. But we're doing it anyway, the big pool party mailbag.
Yeah, we appreciate Matt. And it's fun working with people that are invested in what everyone's doing. And Havia and Lou Pellegrino, they've been very good like that. And we've missed Matt. And it's nice that when we came back, he made us do this at the old time again, at the midnight time. 10 o'clock for me. I'm not, you know, I have nothing to complain about, but midnight for you guys.
It was meant to be. As soon as we heard he was coming on, we were like, oh, we got to tape this at like 3 a.m. Anyways, the trivia question, Andy. Do you want a hint before we reveal the two names?
Yeah, I said I need a clue. Give me a clue.
Okay, one of them you spent a lot of time with in March.
Tony Jefferson.
Yes.
Yeah. The other one. I should have gotten that one, huh?
Yeah. The other one. What's a good hint? He played in Super Bowl 51.
Which would be the last Super Bowl. He played it. So that means he left the Falcons or left the Patriots in.
Yes.
Correct? Yeah. Yeah. Well, nobody left the Patriots this year, so I'm guessing it's a Falcon.
No.
Who did the Falcons – is it a Patriot?
No, you're going in the wrong direction.
There's only two directions. I've gone in both. What do you mean?
No, you said nobody left the Patriots. Someone significant left the Patriots.
So somebody did, so I'm wrong. Jamie Collins? No, because
no.
He didn't play in the Super Bowl.
No,
Who?
He didn't play
Hold
in the
on.
Super Bowl. Offense.
No, that was a terrible guess.
Terrible
Martellus
guess.
Bennett. Martellus yes. Bennett. Yeah, Martellus tight end. Bennett. All right.
He was only there for a year. He was only there for a year, so he didn't, you know, he didn't feel it was weird. It was, yeah.
They'll be fine without him. They'll be fine without him.
And actually, that's
a good player.
That transitions nicely to the top three right here.
Number three.
Because number three is Michael Bennett. And they share
now this whole thing makes more sense.
A mother and a father.
I get why we spent 3 minutes on this.
I actually didn't do that. I went back and looked it up because I thought it was interesting that we had two straight Jaguar additions on our last two shows.
You just have that kind of intuition. It's special.
I do. I knew the show would be taped at 2 a.m., I knew that Martellus Bennett would somehow lead us to Michael Bennett in this show. But Michael Bennett.
I feel like we've done Bennett, don't you? Don't you feel like we've kind of, like people, I would imagine, know what he is, but it seems like we talk about him every week because he's such an iconic player for how teams play today.
He's an iconic player. He is, and he's, I don't want to say unique, but he's a player who's often misunderstood because everyone says, you know, oh, Michael Bennett, defensive end, he's an edge guy. And
So it's
tough to understand. I mean, Michael Bennett, we talked about this. It might have been last year's show or at some point during the season. If you ever look back on Michael Bennett's combine performance, his numbers, and look, there are guys who just don't do well at the combine. They just, the testing, you know, is just not really their thing and that whole thing. But Michael Bennett's numbers were stunningly poor. And I'm sure that's why a lot of teams looked at him or like, like that Albert Breer piece on analytics. Teams will basically set up these parameters and say, well, guys that fall outside this parameter, we're not interested. Now, they won't say that flat out, but they'll say, let's go back to the tape and see if he will overwhelm us and move himself back into consideration. But he tested so poorly that I'm sure he came off a lot of boards because of that.
Yep, and I've got, and that's why he was a low draft pick for Tampa Bay. I've got three quick things to say on Bennett. None of them need elaborating on. One, he was beyond low draft pick, by the way. I'm seeing now he's undrafted. I had it in my mind he was a sixth-round pick for some reason. Undrafted coming into the NFL, and he joined with Seattle, but he played – Tampa Bay was his first stomping grounds. That's where he got his first NFL action. He wasn't every bit as good in Tampa as he is in Seattle, but he was a star in Tampa Bay too. Nobody noticed him for whatever reason, but Michael Bennett has been good throughout his career. That's point number one. Point number two is every time I talk to coaches about who the best player on Seattle's defense is, and that's a great philosophical discussion because there's about seven guys that are top 5 to 10 in their positions on that defense. So who you think's the best kind of tells you what position you value the most. The majority of the coaches, and now it's gotten into overwhelming majority, they say it's Michael Bennett. Yeah. And then the last thing is he plays so long. His arms are so long. And I asked my researchers, hey, look up his arm length and tell me how it compares to everybody else's. Because, I don't know that stuff. His arms, I believe, are 33.5 inches long. The NFL average is 33.5 inches. He is exactly average on arm length for his position, which tells you his technique is tremendous because when you can play so much longer than your body, means you're using your body very efficiently. And he has such quickness in the way he uses his arms and uses his upper body. He's a special, special talent. And I hope he stays really good for a few more years because I think there's a long-term discussion. We don't need to get into a Hall of Fame thing about it. But if he plays like this for 3 or 4 more years, he deserves – I don't know if he'll get that kind of recognition, but he deserves to be talked about like that.
I mean, age 31, 2 or 3 years. Going to be interesting.
Yeah, probably 3 more – probably needs 3 more really good years to get the voters' attention. But he's a sensational player. And if you had him number one on this list, and we got Donald and Watt left. I guess people can figure that out. But it would not be ridiculous to put Bennett number one. Not ridiculous.
Yeah. Number two. Well, let's jump ahead to number two and take the rest of the drama out of this list. Number two is Aaron Donald, Los Angeles Rams. Andy, you were out there. I don't know.
Oh, that was years ago.
Did you get any new insight into Aaron Donald?
You're talking about the recent trip to L.A. I thought you meant when I went and watched film with Donald when he was in St. Louis. I'm saying, well, we got to move on from that. That was a while ago now. No, he wasn't there. He's contract squabble, so he wasn't there when I was there.
Yeah, but doesn't Wade have some stuff to say about him or something like that?
Yeah, but I was following McVay around all day, so I only spoke to Wade when McVay spoke to me to say hi to Wade. You know what I mean? Like I wasn't having lengthy conversations with him.
Yeah.
I think really where we take this debate, because we all know what Aaron Donald is. We all know what J.J. Watt is. And Watt obviously didn't play last year. Doesn't matter. He's the best defensive player I've ever seen. And he'll have to sit out another year for me to remove him from the top of my list. But let's have why don't we just end it this way, Gary? If you're building your team now, and it's for the future, so it's not, win now, but we're also looking long term, which one of these two guys are you taking, Aaron Donald or J.J. Watt?
I'm probably taking Aaron Donald because, Watt's back injury is terrifying to me.
Yeah.
I mean, if you told me Watt was going to have, obviously Donald's younger and therefore is going to play more years regardless, conceivably. But if you told me Watt's back was recovered, 100% recovered and would not be, he'd have a regular aging curve for the rest of his career, then I'd say Watt because I think Watt is that much more dominant than anyone in the league. But I think the way it stands right now with the medical question marks with Watt, and I'm not a doctor, but, you know, back injury's no good for a guy who's carrying around that much weight.
Aaron Donald is 26. J.J. Watt is 28. I think I'm taking J.J. Watt still. I think I'm rolling the dice.
Oh, it's tough.
I think I'm going Watt. I've heard people that have been around the NFL a long time, people that were near Lawrence Taylor, say that J.J. Watt's the best defensive player of all time. He's better than Lawrence Taylor. He just is. That's the quote I heard. I think I still go – you know, he's healthy now. I mean, I've heard he's doing everything right now.
We'll see. I mean, look, I'll answer that question again in 10 years, Andy. I'll tell you what my retroactive answer was.
Yeah, I think I'm going J.J. Watt still. Donald is tremendous. I think when they're at their best, it's not even a close competition, though.
Yeah.
And Watt's the best defensive player that I've ever seen. I mean, I've said that already.
No, I absolutely agree with that. I just get, you know, 300-pounders with back problems. It just,
oh, no, I hear you.
It makes me nervous.
The one other thing, the only other point I'll make for the argument, and it comes across a little too negative for Donald, but and what never shows up on film, you don't see this on film, the plays that you give up as a defensive lineman, some of the plays that you fail to make or that you gamble and you lose on, let's put it that way. Donald will do that at times. And what happens is it makes the linebackers look bad because now they're tackling the guy 6-7 yards downfield because the ball carry's getting up to them quicker because Aaron Donald tried to go underneath the block instead of over the top. It works for him 8 times out of 10, but those other 2 times, you're getting gashed a little bit. You get that with Aaron Donald sometimes. It used to drive the Rams crazy, that previous staff. You don't get that way. You don't see that with J.J. Watt very often. And J.J. Watt, interestingly enough, he gambles a lot too. He'll go underneath blocks that you teach guys to go over the top of. The scheme in Houston has always been a little more conducive to letting Watt have that kind of leeway. But Watt doesn't lose his gambles as much as Donald does. I'll put it that way.
Okay. We should. I think we have to reveal number one for the sake of the voiceovers that we have in the countdown. So we'll just say number one was J.J. Watt.
Number one.
And we just discussed him.
That's how you build a show right there. Bring him to the ending.
Well, we still do have others receiving votes, which is always interesting here. We had 18 guys get votes this week. We just counted down the top 10, so we're starting at number 11 right here. We actually had a tie for 11, Geno Atkins and Mike Daniels. Then we have Damon Harrison, Kawan Short, Leonard Williams, Linval Joseph, Muhammad Wilkerson, and Dontari Poe rounding out the list here. We both had Atkins right on the cusp. You had... I had Atkins at 8, and you had Atkins at 11, so he was pretty close. Matt had Atkins. Oh, Matt left Atkins off of his top 15.
Matt had some blunders this week. Matt didn't have the best week on the voting. Who was the guy that he left off?
Off Michael Bennett, but he thought we were counting Michael Bennett with the edge guys.
You. Okay. Well, I'm fine with all those guys. I don't think Dontari Poe's quite in that discussion anymore. I think he's capable of being that. Mm-hmm. But the way his free agency played out kind of confirms that teams want to see it a little more from him now. But we said at the top of the show, Gary, there are a lot of good defensive linemen in the league right now. We didn't even mention like Chris Jones, some of those guys in New England that go totally unnoticed because they're kind of space eaters, but they do their job really well. There are a ton of really good defensive linemen in football right now. It's a stacked position.
There are. It's exceptionally deep. It seems like every year in the draft, we say it's a very deep group of defensive linemen, and they are, for the most part, panning out in the league. And I think that's another reason, you know, I think you mentioned it last week, between Dontari Poe and Jonathan Hankins. I mean, those are two good players who really just sat around on the free agent market for a long time, and part of it was because there's just, you know, there's only so many spots in the league.
Well, and think back to our show on offensive linemen and how we said there aren't a lot of good good ones here. These top 10 guys are kind of the same they've been in other years. None of them are free agents. None of them are particularly young because the best guys aren't coming into the league right now. And then contrast that with defensive line. And as you said, some of those guys did not get good contracts as defensive linemen right away because there were so many of them. The gap between offense and defensive line talent in the NFL right now is huge. It's getting significant, which tells you that's all the more reason the quarterback position becomes valuable, because the only guy that can really offset that is a quarterback that can read the field and get the ball out. Because if the offensive lineman can't block the defensive lineman, you can't play. So you have to adjust the way you play in order to keep playing. Brings us back to the quarterbacks.
Absolutely. And we'll have our quarterback top 10 in 3 weeks here. Receivers next week, linebackers in 2 weeks, and quarterbacks to wrap up the show, and then the monster mailbag. But that's going to do it for this show right here. Thank you to Matt Booker, our researcher, again this week. Tremendous work from him. And, of course, thank you so much to producer Matt Havia for staying up late to this obscene hour to tape the show with us. And also editor Chris Basil, who gets to work on his own time but often has to stay up late and work on our stuff. We are just so thankful to be part of the digital media family, part of the team here. But most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB 10 Things podcast. Honestly, you guys are the best. Send those questions in for the mailbag show. Again, 100% guarantee we will answer them if they are left on iTunes review. And I think it would be nice if you gave 5 stars. But hey, like we said, like Andy made us say, whatever you want to put, we'll take it. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the MMQB Podcast with Albert Breer, the MMQB Podcast with Peter King, and this podcast, the MMQB 10 Things Podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys next week.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.